Joey Clough, alcoholic?
Hi, Joey.
Just want to take a break for a minute, I'm a little nervous. So I want to thank Dylan for leading this meeting and having me out here tonight. And my friend Tracy, who I don't think she's made it here yet, she's coming in from LAX, for asking me to speak. I want to thank Zoli. That was a great 10 minutes. I definitely got my meeting in. So can we all go home now? So I'll just stick with the format. My sobriety date is March 15th, 03. And I have a home group. It's PG. And I have a sponsor, and she knows that she's my sponsor. And I'm current with her. So I grew up here in Southern California, and I grew up in a pretty normal household. I always say my mom's French and my dad's alcoholic. And the reason I say it that way is because we had like this polarization in my family. We had my mom and her culture, which was everything about our family. And there was a lot of pride there and who she was and who her family and her lineage was. And then there was my dad's side of the family. And there was always this, like, what's wrong with your dad, right? And why does he drink so much? And I don't understand this. And, you know, like this white trash side of the family and then this, you know, this other side of the family. And, you know, my siblings, I have three older siblings, and, you know, everything was about my French side of the family. But all I could see was my dad. He was fun. That side of the family, they were always smiling. They're always laughing. I mean, not that my dad, you know, he had his violent times with his alcoholism and he had some rough times. But I was little. I was a little girl. And all I could see was my dad was fun. And I loved that side. You know, I just loved him. And I was like, something's wrong with me. Something's wrong with me because I'm supposed to be, you know, liking this side. There was this very, like, you know, it's almost like Republican-Democrat. Like, it was just like this polarization. And so anyway, you know, my mom would always say, you know, you Americans, you have a lot of, you have the problem because, you know, you make alcoholism a taboo, right? You put it up on the shelf and you tell kids you can't drink. We don't do that. We just leave it out and we put it on the table. If you want a little wine, have a little wine. It's good for your blood. You have want a little, you know, beer, no problem. And that was my mom's story. My mom, she passed away in 2022. I feel like this is like right in my face. But a few years back, I was at her house and she asked me to get her a glass of wine. And so I go in the kitchen and, you know, I take a wine glass, a small wine glass, not my kind of wine glass, not a goblet, but a, you know, a little glass, you know, wine glass, normal one. Pour a little wine in there, I bring it to her, and she's like, oh, that's so much. And I'm like, would you like me to put that in a smaller glass, Mom? She's like, yes, please. I just want a little sip. And I'm like, okay. I'm like, I don't know, I'm not her daughter. And so I take it back in the kitchen, I put it in a little juice glass, and I pour the rest into the bottle, and I go take it to her. And I'm like, I am definitely my dad's daughter, right? So anyway, back to when I was growing up. So, you know, I grew up in this house and you know, there was a lot, there was violence. There was just, it was just a normal American home. That's what I think. And so I start, my drinking career really started when I was in high school, right? When I became a freshman. My brother's 15 months older than me. He started having friends at the house all the time. My dad moved out when I was in eighth grade. And so by the time I was a freshman, my mom was working two jobs. She was never home, which made our house a party house because there's no parents, right? So my brother always had his friends there. My mom would always buy my brother beer because, you know, to her it was no big deal. So it was always alcohol in our house. And so I just started drinking. And I quickly saw that my drinking was different than my friends. And I would black out. I would I would black out. I would just do things stupid. I just never wanted the party to end. I wanted to drink all the time. I just didn't have a shut-off button. And that was high school. High school was just one situation after another where I was embarrassing myself. And by the time I was a senior, I stopped going to all the high school parties. I didn't go to any of my graduation parties. I didn't even want to go to graduation. I was pretty loaded at graduation, actually. I was doing a lot of drugs. I was really into the Grateful Dead. I know that this is an Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, but at the time, that's just part of my story. I was, you know, at 18 years old, it's a lot easier to get drugs than it is alcohol, and I was just doing a lot of psychedelics. I loved them. And I loved a lot of speed, and I was just doing partying. And I just thought I was just a normal kid. You know, I just thought I was normal. This is just what everybody does. And so I go off to college, and I quickly learn it's a whole new ball game. You know, when I'm in Whittier, and I'm going to my high school with kids I've grown up with all my life, I'm pretty safe. People are watching out for me. I'm with a group of people I've known my whole life. That know my brother and my family. When I'm at college, I don't know anybody. And I start putting myself into some very dangerous situations. And one night, I had been at school. It was just my second semester. And I had been invited to go to a fraternity party. So I drove my car to the frat house, and it was stacked parking. So my car was, like, in the middle of all these other cars, right? I go inside, we start drinking, we start partying. I'm also one of those girls that's like, I'm out of here. Like, as soon as I get a little too much, I'm like, I'm gone, I'm out of here. So I'm at this party, there's all these people. I don't know anybody. I can't remember. I probably couldn't remember, but I couldn't find the guy that had invited me to be there, my so-called date. And so I just decide to leave. Right? So I decide to, and I go and I see my car, I can't get my car out, so I decide to walk from Fraternity Row to the dorms. And this is downtown LA. It's not in a good area. It's not a place where, you know, 2 o'clock in the morning you want a young lady walking home. But I have no concept of what danger I'm putting myself into. So I'm walking home, I get up to the dorm, and I'm putting my key in, and the guy that had invited me to this party comes whipping around, and he's in front of me, and he's like, starts yelling at me how scared he was. He followed me home the whole time. You shouldn't be walking, you know, in the middle of the night, you know, and I had scared him. You know, he was a young man, and, you know, he was very scared. All I remember doing is kind of laughing and going inside. I was completely loaded. And, you know, I just went inside. And I woke up the next morning, and I'm like, I can't go to class. I can't show my face. And I avoided school the rest of the semester. I mean, I made some of my classes, but I avoided the one he was in. And I just, that was my life. Like, I would embarrass myself. I would do something stupid. And then I would just, my solution was not to stop drinking, not to tell anybody what was going on in my life, but just to avoid the person or the places that I had made an embarrassment. And so when the school year ended, I didn't go back to school. And once again, I'm feeling like, here's the good side of the family, here's the bad side of the family, and I'm definitely one of the bad side of the family. And I'm the only one in my family that didn't go to college, including my parents. And, you know, here I am, a dropout. So I moved back to Whittier, to my mom's house, and I quickly met my first husband. He had long, wavy hair and a motorcycle. And that was all I needed. That was for all my requirements right there. And so I got on the back of that my motorcycle, and we started a 14-year relationship. He had children from a previous marriage that I helped raise, and when I came into AA, I stood at the podium and I talked to people and I was a battered wife and I was abused. And if you had my life, you'd drink too. And the reality of it is, and doing the steps that, you know, the work that I've done here, I can tell you that, yes, there was violence in my home. And I do not approve of anyone, woman or man, putting hands on each other. I am definitely a peace-loving person, but I had a big part in that. And I've had to look at that through the steps, and I've had to own that. And that was, you know, here's a man coming home and finding his wife who's watching his kids, cooking dinner, completely loaded, right? Because, hey, when you make beans, you got to put beer in the beans, right? So a little beer in the beans, a little beer in Joey, a little beer in the food, you know? Cooking a turkey, right? Putting a little wine on the turkey, a little wine in Joey. I was always drinking, right? And so it was just, you know, he'd come home and find me drunk, you know, and he'd be screaming at me. I'd be like, I only had two beers. And it was just, I was unhappy, and I thought that I was using alcohol because I was unhappy. But the reality of it is I'm an alcoholic. And it didn't matter if I was unhappy. It didn't matter if I had the perfect marriage. I was going to drink. And that's just my nature. That's who I am. I have an allergy to alcohol. When I put alcohol in my body, I cannot stop the craving. The phenomenon of craving happens. And I just want another one, and I just want another one. And I wake up in the morning, and I'm like, what is wrong with me? What is wrong with me? I love my kids. I love my life, you know, at the time I loved that life, and I was like, what is wrong with me? And, you know, it was just crazy. There was a time in my, during that marriage that I started going to church, and I got really involved in church, and I stopped drinking, and that was for about 2 years, and I got really, really involved in the church, and the kids were going to church, and, you know, It was I went to this far end of church. I was like a really holy bully. And if any of you are, I'm not trying to make fun of that. That was a very nice part of my life, but I was like way over here, you know, you take it to extreme, right? Anything I do, I take to extreme, right? So but during those years, you know, like the violence didn't stop. During those years, the craziness in my home did not stop. And I found myself one day sitting on the bed with a gun in my mouth. My ex-husband loved guns, and he had a collection. And I was sitting on the bed with a gun in my mouth. And I thought to myself, I had this moment of clarity that said, you know, it'd be a much better story if he killed me rather than I killed myself. This is my crazy thinking, because he was always threatening to kill me. So I thought, you know what? Screw it. I got nothing to lose. I'm not going to kill myself. If he's going to kill me, let him kill me, right? And so that moment gave me the courage to stand up and tell him, I'm out, right? I tap out right now. And so he didn't kill me, obviously. We ended up getting divorced. I got out of that marriage. And the whole time I'm thinking, oh, good. Now my life's going to be good, right? I'm not going to drink like that anymore. I got rid of the problem, right? I moved to the west side of L.A., closer to my sisters. I get a nice car, a little sports car. I buy a house with my sister. I get a nice job. Everything looks good, right? I'm like, yeah, this is great. But I take myself there. And I start going out to dinner with people from work, and we start going to these restaurants, and I'm getting loaded and blacking out at dinner with people I work with. And they're having to be like, hey, you can't drive home, and they're having to help me drive home. I mean, it was embarrassing. My sister would take me to, she's in the entertainment industry, and she would take me to nice functions, right? she's a normie. She's the only one in our family that's a normie, other than my mom. I would get loaded, and I would be hitting on her, not would be, I did hit on her boss in front of his wife. I'm like, hey, I'm just stupid. I'm a happy drunk, but I'm stupid. And so anyway, what happened for me was, there are a couple things. Okay, so I'll get sober here. So I went out drinking with a bunch of people, and, well, we went to dinner, right? And so at this point, I'm really counting my drinks. I'm like, okay, I'm going to be cool tonight. I'm not going to get loaded. I'm going to be good. So I'm counting my drinks. We have dinner, got food in my body, had 2 glasses of wine, good, right? Nothing's going to happen. I'm good. So they're like, yeah, let's go down to the Circle Bar in Santa Monica. Circle Bar. Yeah, that's my husband's favorite place, or was, not anymore. He's sober too. Okay, so we go down to the Circle Bar, we come in, and I tell my friends, hey, I'm going to go to the ladies' room. So I walk back to the ladies' room, I come back out, and my friends are standing against the wall, and they go, hey, we got you a beer. So they hand me a beer. Okay, so I've only had 2 glasses of wine, I've had a dinner, I think, oh no, have a beer. That is the last thing I remember. I barely remember even taking that to my lips. I remember nothing else that night. I immediately go into a blackout. And I don't know how much I had to drink. And the next thing I know is I'm standing in front of my house, and I have a key in my hand, and I'm getting, you know, I'm trying to get in my door. I'm having a little bit of problems, but, you know, hey, I'm drunk, right? It's not normal to have problems getting in the house. So I'm, like, trying to get in. And I live with my sister, so the door opens, right? And this lady is on the other side that's not my sister, and she starts screaming. Well, I already have my foot in the doorway, and she starts slamming that door on my leg. And she's screaming, I'm going to call the police. You know, she didn't know who I was. So I get my leg out of there, and I sit on the curb. Why? I don't know. You can't. Please do not ask me after this meeting. I have no idea why I sat on that curb. So I sat on the curb, the cops come pulling up, and they ask me for my ID. I gave it to them, and they go, you're really scared, you know, you're scaring this lady. And I go, but I don't know what I said to them. But I just remember the guy who's taller than me, which isn't unusual, and he's taller than me, and he's looking down at me, and he has my ID in his hand, and he's like, you're not that far off. And I'm like, God, I felt like I was 5 years old. Like, you know, the police are taking me home because I'm a lost little girl. So they pour me in the back of the cop car, and they take me home. And I'm sorry for those that experience did not end that way with you, but they took me home, and they told me to get out of the cop car and not leave my house. Go in the house. Don't go anywhere tonight. That's what he said to me. And I was like, okay. Hi, Tracy. So I get in the house, and I wake up the next morning. My ankle is swollen. I still to this day have a divot in my leg. So I call central office. I knew enough about calling central office because I had heard my siblings talking about being in the AA and being in different 12-step programs and trying to get my dad to go. And so I'd heard enough about that kind of stuff that I knew where to call. So I called and I found a meeting, and I went to this meeting, and I'm standing in the back. And at the end of the meeting, I got there late, of course, and everybody stood up and they're leaving, and coming out of the meeting is my cousin. Okay, my cousin's been sober about, at that point, he'd been sober about 15 years. He got sober as a young kid, and you know, probably in his 20s. And so he's, you know, like, what are you doing here? So I start going to meetings with my cousin, right? He's like, hey, come on, come with me. I'll introduce you to the women. Start going to the meetings with me. I'm the youngest of, like, 9 kids between the cousins and my siblings and everything. I am really good at just hanging on to your tail leg. I'm really good at that. I'm really good at just standing next to you and just being that little person next to you. And so my cousin just started taking me to meetings. I stood in the back. I didn't work any steps. I didn't get a sponsor. And I took a 60-day dirty chip. If you don't know what a dirty chip is, that means I took a chip saying I was 60 days sober, and I was not. I had drunk somewhere around 45 days. And my drinking looked different at that point because I'm going to AA meetings, right? And I'm hiding it. So my drinking was looking like buying a six-pack on the way home from work. And from like, you know, 9 o'clock to 2 o'clock in the morning, I'm drinking a six-pack, or I'm drinking a couple bottles of wine, and I'm just trying to, you know, scratch the itch. That's all I'm doing, just to survive, right? And trying to fake this sober life. So after 60 days, you know, I didn't want to keep lying, so I go back out there. Another year and a half goes by, and my drinking just goes right back to what it was. And so what happened was, it was a Sunday afternoon. Sundays, weekends look like for me, I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning. It's my favorite day to get up early because it's beer time, right? You can drink in the morning, right? So I get up, I'm drinking my beer, I'm watching TV. I love getting up on a Saturday morning, having a nice cold beer and watching the news. I don't know why, but I feel like I'm being smart somehow, you know, watching the news, I'm drinking the beer. And then the rest of the day just goes on like that. So this one Sunday in March of 2022, I'm at this point, it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm at this point horizontal on my couch, right, because I've been drinking all day long. And my sister calls me, let it go to voicemail. My other sister calls me, let it go to voicemail. My dad calls me. I'm like, something's up. Somebody wants to get a hold of me. So I answer the phone, and my cousin, the brother of the guy that met me at the AA meeting, not met me, but, you know, saw me at the AA meeting, OD'd and died. And he had at one time long-term sobriety. And my dad told me, you know, Kent died, and I hung up the phone, and intuitively I knew I have to go to his funeral. He lived in Hawaii. So I called my aunt, and I call the airlines, I get a ticket, and then two days later I'm on a plane to Hawaii to bury my cousin. And I walked through that with my aunt, and I held her hand. And I came back to the States, and I started going to meetings again. I started going with my cousin and my sister. We started going to meetings and stood in the back, didn't work any steps, didn't get a sponsor, and at 60 days, I took a 60-day dirty chip. And now my whole family thinks I'm getting sober. They're still grieving Kent, and I'm now really hiding my alcoholism. I'm really hiding my drinking. That was March. So that was sometime in the summertime I started drinking again. By Christmas time, at Christmas, I told my family, yeah, I am sick. I have a really bad cold. I can't come to Christmas. That's because I had a refrigerator full of alcohol, and I just wanted to stay home, watch Christmas movies, and drink. And I knew if I went to the family house, I'd have to watch my drinking. I'd have to curb it, right? And I can't curb it. So my sister, the one that was getting sober with me after Kent died, she's got 1 year more of sobriety than me, she came to my house bringing me soup. I don't know, I was going to say chicken soup. I don't know what kind of soup it was. It was soup. And I remember her knocking on the door, and I let her in, but then I stood way across the room because I'm like, I don't want you to get sick. I didn't want her to smell the alcohol on me, right? And then I'm like, oh, she bought me soup. You know, I felt this big. So anyway, so what happens is, you know, that was Christmas, and, you know, New Year's comes around. I'm still drinking, and I'm just, every day I'm like, I got to get back to AA, I got to get back to AA, I got to get back to AA. And so I get set up on a blind date with this guy, right? So I go to this blind date, and I'm sitting across the table from him, and he's like he's got his lingo going. He's on a pink cloud. He's got all this AA lingo. And I'm like, are you sober? And he goes, yeah, 2 years. And I'm like, I think he had 3 years. 3 years. And I'm like, I'm sober too. I had not drank for about 5 days because I'd been trying to really get back to AA. I've been really working on not drinking. So it's been about 5 days, maybe a little more. And my date's March 15th. And from the time of that first date with him, I have not drank. Why? I have no idea. You know, it wasn't like all of a sudden my life became rainbows and daisies. Like, I've gone through some hard times in sobriety. I have 21 years, but for some reason, God's grace went on me that day. You know, it still gets me because I just can't even believe I have the life I have now. You know, I was not a spring chicken when I came to this group. You know, I had a lot of years on me, and I, you know, the life I have today is amazing. And my boyfriend then, he started taking me to PG. I didn't know what PG was. I told my cousin, the one that had 15 years sober, you know, that I was telling you about, his brother passed, you know, Keith, I told him, I go, hey, I met this guy. And they knew each other. They grew up together. It was just a weird coincidence. But I go, yeah, John goes to PG. And he goes, oh, he must be really bad. And I'm like, okay, I don't know what that means. But and so I just started going to meetings with him, you know. And the thing that I did differently and what's gotten me this 21 years is I got a sponsor. I did the steps. You know, I sponsor women. And I stayed in the middle. And I'm active in my home group, you know. And when my friend asks me to come out and speak, I do it. You know, I do things against my, against my whatever, what I don't think is going to help me, and I do it anyway, right? And I love my life. We, you know, we've had some wonderful times. We got married a year after we met, and, you know, we got to buy a house. We've our kids are doing really well. We have 3 grandkids. We've had great, great things in our lives. You know, we've also had some hard times. My dad got really sick. He was on life support for 3 months. He died. I was actually pregnant at the time that he passed away. I got pregnant with John. That's the only thing I wanted. I was like, you know, I just want to have a family. I want to have kids. And I want to have kids of my own. I really do. And we got pregnant. My dad went in and had this surgery. It didn't go well. And about... he was still on life support, actually, and I was 4 months pregnant, and I lost the baby, and, you know, that was really hard, and I remember coming home from the doctor's appointment and, you know, finding out we'd lost the heartbeat, and I remember going home, and there was towels on the couch, right? I hadn't folded the laundry. It was towels on the couch, and so I walked over to the couch, and I just started folding the towels. And I stopped for a moment thinking, I don't want to drink. And I was like, I don't even know where that comes from. Like I didn't know who that girl was that doesn't want to go and drink, that doesn't want to go run down the street and leave, right? That doesn't want to get in my car and tell my husband, I'm out of here, I'm gone, because that's my nature. And, in 2020, my brother got really sick. He got cancer, and he got a really bad form of cancer that was it was very painful, and he literally screamed the last like month of his life. They couldn't give him enough drugs to get him out of pain, and it was really hard. And I got to walk through that. You know, I got to hold his hand. I got to sit with him. I got to watch him pass away. And my mom died of lung cancer two years ago. The woman that doesn't drink or smoke, doesn't do anything, and here she dies of lung cancer. You know, she gets diagnosed in August of 2022, and she's gone by November 3rd. And I got to walk through that with my sisters. And there's nothing you can't walk through. There's nothing that you can't do in sobriety. I have so many friends. You know, I want to thank Jordan for driving with me tonight and being here. She's a really good friend of mine, and I love you dearly. And, you know, and Tracy, I've known Tracy my whole sobriety. She's like one of the first women I've met. My husband plays sober softball, and he took me to a sober softball game, and there was Tracy and Sarah sitting in the bleachers, and I sit down over here. These two women are over here in the bleachers. Do I walk over and sit with the other? No, I'm sitting way over here, and they're like, what are you doing over there? Why don't you come sit with us, you know? And you know, people have just loved me in this room. And like I said, you know, I have a really good life. My husband and I are very active in PG. Or in our home group. It doesn't matter what home group you're in. In our home group, he plays sober ball. You know, we go to sober dances. We just had a dance a couple weeks ago. It was so much fun. I'm usually getting all the food ready for it. And, you know, we just have fun. We just do things. And if you're new, I just want to welcome you and tell you that you can get through anything in sobriety. And, you know, what I do today, the most important thing for me today is my 10, 11, and 12. And, you know, I go to bed at night, I review my day, and I am really grateful for my life. And I do my meditation and prayer. And to me, those really help me. It helps me be peaceful. I know the days that I don't do my meditation and prayer and the days that I do, they're much different. And so those really help me. And if you're new and you're going through the steps, just hang in there, because you know I have a little bit of time. I want to share this one story. So at 7 years of sobriety, I had not really worked the steps a lot. I had a sponsor that really believed that just going to meetings was enough. Like, you're going to be in the middle of the fellowship, you're going to go to meetings, and that's really what you need to do. I remember reading her my fourth, and she kept looking at her watch. God bless her, I love the lady, but she kept looking at her watch, and because she was a runner and she wanted to go for her run. And she was like, look, Joey, you know, you're not like a mass murderer or anything. I'm sure you're fine. And then, you know, and I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'm like stupid and new. You know, I'm like, oh, okay. So I really didn't do a lot of step work my first few years. And so my life started getting uncomfortable. And what that looked like was I was at a family get-together in the backyard of our house, my mom's house. She had a pool, and we had all the cousins, and everybody was over, and our dog was there, and the kids were playing in the pool, and the dog was barking, and it was upsetting some people, right? Well, I don't care. That's my dog, you know? Like, he's just barking. Like, who's it bothering, right? That was my attitude. So my sister kind of was like, you need to take the dog inside. It's scaring some of the kids. And I'm like, Heidi's not going to do anything. She's fine. Now, she's a 90-pound German Shepherd, right? And she was scaring some of the kids. But I was like, Heidi's a puppy. Like, she's fine. She's a sweetheart. She's not going to hurt anybody. So I'm very selfish, right? And I start fighting with my sister, who's like my best friend. And we start getting into it. And I'm like, you know, I tell my husband, let's just get out of here. Let's go. And, you know, this is me not working a program. And then what happens shortly after that is that we have someone that's doing a couch commitment in our house. This woman comes over, does a couch commitment. She has two little dogs with her, right? And so we go to bed. We have our German Shepherd in our bedroom. And then she's on the couch with her two little dogs. And it's 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm awake, right? And my head's just going, like thinking about all kinds of stuff. And John had had some dental work done and we had Vicodin in the kitchen. And I'm like, I could get up, but if I get up, Heidi's going to get up, my dog. And then if Heidi gets up and I open that door, her dogs are going to get up. And then she's going to get up and John's going to get up. Everybody's going to get up and they're going to go, why are you up? And I'm not going to want to tell anybody why I'm up. So I'm thinking in my head and I'm thinking of the Grinch who stole Christmas. You know how he glides through the house? And I'm like, I'm seriously thinking, like, can I do that, right? Can I get away with this and not wake anybody up? So I make it through the night. I don't get up and I don't disrupt anybody. And the next day, I go in my car. I drive over to a parking lot where there was a big Bed Bath & Beyond. And every time I see that sign, I think of this day. And I sit there and I call a friend of mine. And I cry and I talk to her and I cry and I talk to her for several hours. And she was just like, you need to change sponsors. You need to go through the steps. You need to do something different. And I immediately got a new sponsor. She took me to the book, every single word of the book, every single step. I started sponsoring women. I started, you know, I just had a new experience. And, you know, it was like when Dorothy opens the door and she goes from black and white to color. That's what my life went like. You know, it went from black and white to color. My whole experience in sobriety was different. And here I am. Here's a girl that's buried her cousin, right, from ODing, watched her aunt, you know, cry and lose her firstborn baby, right, from this disease. I've watched my parents split up. I've watched, you know, here I have this wonderful husband, wonderful marriage. I have all these things in my life, and I'll throw them away like that. If that was woman, that was God's grace, that woman was on the couch that night. God's grace, right? We don't do a lot of couch commitments at my house. We do not do a lot. And I'll tell you, that night was God. And, you know, I can't thank this program enough. I cannot thank you guys being here tonight, because you guys being here tonight helps me stay sober. And I hope that something I said can help you. So thank you very much.